Thank you. Sorry about the wait. You've probably gathered that I'm Vic Oliver. I'm an employee of Catalyst, and they kindly employ me for 4 days a week, and on the fifth day, I get to play around with the RepRap. How many people have already got questions, by the way? Just so I can time this, because we might run out. Not too many. Okay, right. Okay. This is my revelation. Hardware does indeed suck. I wish to expand upon this, and this is why hardware sucks. For those of you who don't get the visual imagery, the hardware that you and I go out and get, it's mass-produced for the average Joe, and basically that ain't us. It's not sold for our benefit, okay? People want to make money out of this stuff, or bits and pieces they sell for it. And you can't really do an awful lot about that. And as you may have noticed, you can't easily fix things either. And so you find yourself wondering, you know, wouldn't it be nice if hardware was like open source? And so, RepRap. All right, we wanted to make a machine that you could make stuff with, that you could make replacement parts with and handle strange materials with, that maybe you can make electronics with, makes its own unique parts so you don't have to be dependent on anybody for spares or anything like that. And because they're pretty much ubiquitous, control it by a domestic PC. We're not doing a theoretical replicator here, we're doing a real world thing that the likes of you and I can go out and play with. Okay, so Dr. Bowyer came up with this great idea. Let's do a Cartesian robot with a print head, so it's all nice linear axes. Yes, they were screw thread driven. This is now belt driven because it's nice and fast. You have lots of extrusion tools, squirt stuff out, step down half a millimeter, squirt the next load of stuff out, down another half mil, squirt the stuff out, and you build up your object like that. And if you get it right, it's self-fabricating. Okay, so making the first RepRap. Well, I think we're about there. And that's pretty much what it looks like. The initial timescale and expense, they do matter from the point of view of the budgeting department of the university, but the time and expense immaterial, because once you've got one, you can have as many as you like. All right? Okay, so it extrudes at 4 cc's an hour, and that's a bit slow, and you think, okay, painful. That's only half the speed of the commercial gear. And once it sort of propagates into the hands of people like yourselves, no doubt the speed will come up a bit. So, the first Darwin, not this one, this is the second one, was built by Adrian Bowyer and Ed at the University of Bath in the UK. And that's a wondrous picture of it. And there were two. That's me, together with a nice bottle of 50-year-old Ballantines, toasting myself in a little mug I printed. And then somebody contacted me through the internet and said, I've built this RepRap and I'm having a bit of trouble making the extruder work. Sorry, who are you? And Andreas had indeed downloaded all the STL files and everything, put it through a friend's 3D printer at a commercial establishment, and he built one. So, hey, our instructions work. How about that? And then I discovered there was another one in the London Science Museum that somebody had laser cut from sheet plywood. So that's pretty cool. We'll see more about that. So, let's assume that one of us crazy nutcases actually manages to make one of these things work. All right? It replicates. So now there's three already. There's the original, there's the copy you made, yay, and then there's the one that proves that your copy can actually replicate. All right? So you've already tripled your production capacity. This is brilliant. All right? So we then set ourselves up for a revolution in the world, because the RepRap, once you guys get hold of it, will start making little mini factories. They'll even be able to make power sources of raw materials. And yeah, we hope somebody does a recycler. If they don't, we will. And you've got yourself a fabricating revolution. So riprapps are going to breed like rabbits. You guys are going to hack them to death. And the good designs survive, bad ones die. We all know this. This is how Linux becomes so great. We're not going to build in features we don't want. And in short, these things are going to evolve. We've made sure the whole tool chain is open source, so you guys can have a complete field day with it. Okay, so why get a riprap? Cool, all right. Okay. You can make stuff with a riprap that you can't get elsewhere. You can make shapes with this that you can't mill out of a block of metal, for example. Right? If you need a distributor cap for a 1947 Ford Jailbird or something, and you know, unobtainium. Let's say you're one of these poor people in Texas, and certain articles are forbidden from possession. Or it's just too damn expensive, or they only deliver to the US or whatever. Well, yeah, hey, print one. Right? What will people make? Yes, good one. Well, we know people are going to make riprapps because they've already phoned me up and emailed me and told me they have. But basically, we don't decide what you guys are going to do with it. We've provided this tool. But historically, we can tell what some of you are going to be doing with it. All right? No juniors in the audience. Okay, right. Fine. Okay. First thing people will make with it, weapons. All right? Every other blooming manufacturing process in the world has been weaponized. Undoubtedly, someone will do it with a riprap. It will not be me. We will not encourage this, but on the other hand, there's not a lot we can do about stopping people. When I actually came into customs to attend this wondrous conference, I turn up. They're worried about a pocket knife in my luggage. And I have a universal fabricator in a big box next to me. Rare one. I went to OSCON, yeah. Our entry to the US, I ended up in the little room and we had a conversation. Yeah, unfortunately there were no gloves involved, so that's okay. So, what else are people going to do with it? Well, again, based on historical data, people are going to make sex toys with it. Okay? On the left there, we have I think it's between 2,000 and 3,000-year-old Chinese sex toy. Quite creative, actually. And on the right, we have a stone tool dating from about 10,000 years ago, found in Germany. It appears to be dual use because somebody seems to have used it for napping flints at some point, perhaps a jealous spouse. And finally, drug paraphernalia. Because again, people are like that. Okay, now, so what do we hope they'll do with it? Well, other than, never mind. We hope they will make bigger, better, go faster, smaller, whatever, riprapps, and tools that fit on riprapps. We hope they will process more materials and get more creative than we've been at sort of printing with wire and chocolate and concrete and all sorts of stuff. All right, and we hope they will make the damn thing quieter, because it has a very poor spouse approval factor at the moment. And, you know, pretty colors, like Ed selected some nice colors of plastic to print that one in, and, you know, it's a high room. And, you know, you get your hand in there and crunch and got finger guns. So, you know, people will want to put cases around it and stick brand names on it, things like that. And we wish them all well, so that's cool. Now, how is the riprap in the house going to change the world? Well, that picture sort of gives you a clue, doesn't it? Linux is dependent on somebody else's hardware to run on. We're not. So, we're starting something not so much like the Industrial Revolution, where everything was centralized. We're starting something more like the Agrarian Revolution, where anybody can pick up on it. All right? And it's a very close analogy. We plant all these grasses and they grow and we harvest them and we take great care of them and we put them away in sheds and we store them in perfect conditions and then next year we go out and plant them in the fields. Well, some of them, the rest of them we eat, but you know. And chickens, same thing, most successful bird on the planet. Why? Well, because it's stupid, it can't fly, and it tastes good. Not usually good things, evolutionarily speaking, but there you go. Okay, so now anybody is a manufacturer, all right? And if you think that you're going to outproduce a rep rap, go study exponential progression again. And if you have a business that's based on rep rap and you want to make something else, then you just feed it new plans. It's it's great for customized assembly. How else will your rep rap change society before, apart from blowing the bottom out of the conventional manufacturing processes? You can't really ban them. You're not supposed to download MP3s, right? Let alone MP3 players and print them out, right? Yeah, and you can bet that when you download an MP3 player and print one out for yourself, you're not going to bother with DRM, are you? All right? So governments are going to get used to, are going to have to get used to the idea that they cannot just ban something and have it not appear in their country anymore at all, right? If it's useful, like copying your MP3s onto your MP3 player, people will do it, okay? Now, this carries through into a whole other load of parts of society, which we'll get to in a minute. But they're good because they're environmentally friendly. Things are made where they're needed, they're made in the quantity they're needed, they're made fresh. This is more important than you think, particularly if you're in another country, you don't want to get left with a stock of stuff you can't shift, particularly if you haven't got a lot of money. All right. You can adapt rep wraps to use local materials. So if a part's supposed to be made from material X, you haven't got it, but you've got material Y, which is good enough, then you use the local material. And that's great. That means the rep wrap evolves and somebody else gets to use that material as well. We all share in the knowledge. The plastic that we're using here to not print things yet, but we'll get around to that, is called polylactic acid. It's made from milk waste or fermented starch. So it's a bioplastic. It actually consumes CO2 when it's made. It's both biodegradable and recyclable. All right. So it won't biodegrade in a landfill. It will biodegrade in a compost heap. So if you haven't got recycling facilities, you just compost the old parts and grow more starch and make more plastic. It's great. And of course, you don't bother with built-in obsolescence. In fact, you can print spare parts. You can recycle, you wear your sandal out, great, you throw what's left in the recycler and print another one. Yeah. So our health will be changed by these things because what we've made is a wondrous 3D Cartesian robot. And if you've ever seen sort of biology analysis and synthesis labs, they have this little 3D robot that goes around shuffling fluids from one thing to another and heating them up and seeing them past sensors and stuff like that. Well, we've got a nice 3D robot there. Somebody's going to do that with it. We can also print microfluidics. So we can make little bioreactors and so forth. And the idea is that we'll eventually end up be able to produce little chemical factories that can produce plastic, or they can start producing things like vaccines. All right. Now, what happens when you produce vaccines is that you have to ship them to the place where they need to be used. And you have to pay big licensing fees to the guys that make them. All right. No longer. Because once you have this kind of technology, the vaccines are made at the point of use. So you don't have to worry about storage and transit. And because people are making them for themselves, in most of the free world, you are allowed to make for personal use patented items without having to pay a license fee. Right? So as long as you make the drugs yourself, they're free. This could be interesting. All right. We're talking, of course, medical pharmaceuticals here, guys. All right. Now, and then we come along to the early adopters who've slightly tweaked the manufacturing process for the drug. Can't be bothered to wait for FDA approval and try it. Okay? It's called evolution in action. So, you know, obviously this thing has applications in education. All the way down. But let's just think of a typical advantage in the world that we know well, not in the developing world, where obviously it's going to come in handy too. Teaching engineers, right? An FDM machine, if you buy a commercial one, it's about $50,000. And yeah, it prints a lot more accurately than this thing. It comes with a huge maintenance contract. And you're only allowed to put their plastic in it, which makes it cost about $200 a kilo somehow. And, you know, there's one, all right? And you've got lots of engineering students. Hopefully students are still going into engineering, right? And, for that amount of money, you could have 100 ret wraps. And if one of the students decides he's going to put sort of like weed eater lime through there as an experiment, all right? It's not going to matter. He just spends a little while learning things and learning mostly how to put together a new ret wrap. So when you can make anything like that, even students, the concept of money starts to get a bit iffy, because if you can make anything, money's only useful for land and stuff. If you're making all your own drugs, the concept of taxing you for medical care and so forth becomes, you know, a little dodgy and stuff like that. So there could be a whole load of knock-on effects that just come from owning these machines and making stuff for yourself. So you might wonder, how far have we got? Okay, well, we started in 2005 announcing project, and I think it was about 6 days in my workshop was the first prototype, printed really, really short plastic tubes. But it proved that the concept worked. And then it blew up. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, these $2 shop glue guns, they're not made very well, and the elements, yeah. Okay, so it's been to LCA a couple of times. It's produced its own parts. It did that a while ago. So why hasn't it replicated yet? You know, well, we only got the software working really well about 2.5-3 weeks ago. And I've got this much of a replicated so far. All right? You can, you know, these are the corner blocks here. We've got the things that raise and lower the table. There's an assembly in there with an anti-backlash spring and all sorts of stuff. And, We are making progress. We have not called it 1.0 yet, and we will not until we self-replicate. And with a bit of luck, that's going to be about, 3 weeks away? As soon as I get back from here and start making more bits for it. All right, so that's how far we've got. That's about 3 years ago. So, bit of a schedule here. All right, when Linus, bless his little cotton socks, says, I'm making Linux. Version 1.0 usable, that was about 3 years, okay? We started working on this thing about 3 years ago. So, yeah, that about figures. So how do we have ret wraps out there already in the world when we've only just sort of started making the first three or four? It's easy. We cheat. Okay, we thought, ooh. We'll make molds. All right. Why have a ret? But why make molds when you've got a ret wrap? Well, they print at 4 cc's an hour. Okay. In an hour, I can make a whole load of molds, and we can get these into the hands of early adopters. So we did that, and we did it in an extremely high-tech fashion with Lego. We use plasticine as well. And silicone molding resin, and it's great stuff. So that's what one of them looks like if you get one of the resin molded kits. We actually have to now try and support a community. So we've had to set up a research foundation to do this. Why a research foundation? Well, it's this patent thing, right? There's a patent on fusion deposition modeling. I don't understand the details, and I've been told, don't try and understand the details, so I won't, in the States, and it expires this year. All right? So until then, we are spreading the results of our research, which you are allowed to do. Okay. But if you buy one of the kits and take it to the States, that's your problem. But we are allowed to distribute the results of the research in the States, and that's cool. And actually, the people who own the patent know what we're doing, and of course, there's so little time, and they think we're actually doing some cool stuff. This isn't such a big problem as you might think. So we've sort of generated, we've got parts of this generators, which have got suppliers and everything, and we're trying to make it more friendly for the average user, and also simultaneously trying to nail down a 1.0 design, which is kind of an interesting conflict. We are collaborating with Fab at Home. Now, Fab at Home have worked on a fabricating machine. How much time we got left, by the way? Anyone? Lots. Oh, cool. Right, somebody get me a scotch. Yeah. Okay. So we are collaborating with the Fab at Home guys. All right. Now, Hod Lipson, who basically runs the Fab at Home stuff, he is more interested in the theoretical aspects of mechanically self-assembling things. And he's also really interested in making multiple material stuff. All right. But he's not actually interested in making a robot that can self-replicate per se. But he does have the same kind of problems in some areas that we do. So although at first glance the projects look similar, they're not as similar as you might think. There is a lot of overlap. For example, no free file format that describes multiple material 3D objects. All right. People have heard of textures for the surface, yes. For the actual materials, no. So basically, we're going to take a bunch of STL files, give them an XML header describing what each file is and where it goes and what it's made of, and then zip the whole thing up. And that will do for a while until people actually start blending materials. So they have something that's ceramic at one end, metal at the other, and sort of something interesting in the middle. So that's where we're heading with them. And also, they've given us some interesting stuff about fabricating electrical components. We're also going to, after we've nailed down 1.0, we're going to move to use the Arduino board, which some of you may have seen in Jonathan's presentation the other day, and even bought them and played with them and so forth. These have availability in many countries. They are multiple sourced. They are open sourced. So this is all good stuff, and we hope that the community that play with them already will want to play with RetWraps too. There's meant to be another page in there, but I'm running the PDF version. Sorry about that. There's a company called Ponoco in New Zealand. That do laser cut fabrication. You upload an EPS file, they'll cut it out, they'll send you the bits. Okay, lots of people do that. But Ponoco also have a website where you can upload your designs, and if somebody wants your design, they can have it printed, they receive a set of bits, and you receive a bit of money. Okay, so We started working with Ponoco to make the plywood laser cut one you saw earlier available as a kit of parts. The resin stuff is available as a kit of parts as well. So we got plenty of time, so I can tell you a little bit about what we're going to do with it. You want to hear that? Where we're going with 2.0? The filament that we feed into this extruder gets made up by the same sort of company that makes plastic welding rod and knitting needles and things. We use Imagine Plastics in Hoddesdon. Thank you very much for doing it free. And it's, you know, it's not the way it comes. You buy plastic, you get a big bag of granules, right? So we're going to make a hopper-fed extruder, all right? Which is a little bit trickier, but that's what we're going to do. We're also looking at making a two-part extruder. So basically two syringes, so you can do epoxy, all right? Various kinds of epoxy you can do. We've got a paste extruder. If you excuse me while I go and pull those around out here. Oh, jeez. Yeah. All right. So what we've got is we've got a balloon in a bottle. This is real high tech, eh? And we've got a piece of silicone tubing here with a nozzle down the end. All right? And the idea is you put whatever you wanted to extrude, sort of pasty stuff like plaster, hot chocolate kind of stuff. In here. And, sorry? Oop. There's one or the other. Ooh. Yeah, I'll wreck that. All right, basically. Sorry? Make parts, yes. Could take me a while to design that. But hey, I'll open source it when I do. All right. What we've got here is a solenoid and a bit of plastic that sort of loops around a piece of silicone tubing. All right, so the solenoid can crush and release this piece of silicone tubing. Pressure in here compresses the balloon, pushes whatever is in it out of one of these bits of brass tube into the silicone tube, and you turn it on and off and draw with it. So you can print with silicone paste and stuff like that. We did try a condom, but, you know, too small, and, yeah. Another cunning thing, we actually used the edge of the balloon to cover up the air inlet hole, so that when the air tries to get back out again, the balloon tries to push through the hole, fails, one-way valve, no parts, yes. Okay. We're also looking at putting a inkjet printer head on the chassis. So we can try doing cool things like printing with organic semiconductors. So we can try printing some small-scale low-power circuitry. For the higher power stuff, we've got a head that looks much like this extruder head, which, by the way, there's a hollow brass bolt in there down the bottom there, wrapped in nichrome. That's our top-secret heating mechanism. Okay, whole thing sprayed with barbecue paint, because that's good up to about 600 Celsius or something. And that's held in a block of Teflon. There's a screw thread in here powered by the motor. It just pushes the plastic filament down into the hot bit, and the molten plastic comes out the bottom. If you put a stick of low-temperature solder in there instead, as soon as that touches any of the hot parts, the solder, being heavy, just falls out the hole in the bottom, and there's our metal extrusion head. So that'll work. So we've got all these things coming together, moving to the Arduino boards and trying to use DC servos instead of the stepper motors. Keeps the costs down, keeps the availability up, and hopefully you should be able to see 1.0 emerging in a few weeks, and then I really, really hope the likes of you will all come and play with it. Thank you very much. No, it's kind of hot in there, and it just sort of comes out. And if it doesn't come out, you raise the temperature a bit more. Sometimes it comes out brown, and you get this nice toasty smell, which is not good. The nozzle on the end is like an acorn nut or dome nut with a hole drilled in the end. So you can unscrew it, and if like there's a chunk of grot in there, plugged up the hole or something, you just get the acorn nut, point a blowtorch at it, and everything sort of vaporizes, and then you put it back on again. It's all okay. Yeah, you let it cool down, yeah. No fingerprints. There you go. No. So yeah, we're in the questions bit, aren't we? Well, there's an enthusiastic fellow at the back there. What's up? The question was, how many death threats have I received from large governments and companies? None. This is why we made it open source. All right? I'm just one of the little bits. And expendable. Yes, sir? Have we got any ideas about using it to print metal, apart from solder? Well, yes. We have discovered that this stuff vaporizes without leaving char. So one of the things you can do is print out your object, coat it in investment plaster, bake it, you have a mold. And you can pour whatever kind of metal or resin you want into the top of it. So that's one way of doing it. Of course, you can stick a router head on it. It'd take me about a day to do a router head on it, but that wouldn't get you guys any closer to receiving or replicating rep wrap. And that's what I want to concentrate on. And it's really, really hard to not play with it. You know, you've got to concentrate. Let's get the replicator out there. I want to build one of these things. No, back to the replicator. Yeah. Yes, sir. What sort of cost are we looking at to build one? If you want to build one like this and use the resin parts, I won't even mention the cost of the FDM fabricated parts. It's just ludicrous. If you want to make one from the resin parts, I think it's about 800 US, roughly. That's very roughly, right? Because I don't know of anyone who's actually done it all yet. And yeah. We hope to get that down to sort of more like 400 bucks. That's probably where it's going to start bottoming out when we get to version 2. Yeah. At the back there. What's the current printing resolution? Okay. Current printing resolution is about 0.1 millimeter accuracy for positioning. The thinnest lines we're doing are about 0.7, 0.5 millimeters, somewhere in that ballpark. As we get the head speed up, you sort of smear the plastic out more and your accuracy actually increases. But you also have to get like your vectors right when you're going around corners and things. And that's harder than it sounds. It's a bit jumpy at the moment, so we can't crank the speed up as high as we'd like. But we reckon it'll be about 0.5 millimeter accuracy. Though, of course, once we get the inkjet head going on it, then the resolution will increase. And the mechanism, the Z-axis is good to less than a hundredth of a millimeter, and we are exceeding 0.1 millimeter accuracy with the X and Y axes. Right at the back there, sir. Right. Have I been swapping notes with the people who've been doing medical inkjet part printing, like body parts, cells, that kind of thing? I actually bumped into some of them at SciFu last year, and we had a bit of a chat. And we found that there are two kinds of inkjet printer heads. There are ones which sort of vaporize the ink to steam and squirt the ink drops out, and some which use sort of piezoelectrics to make little drops of ink fly out. And obviously, if you're printing cells, you don't want to vaporize them before you print them out. Okay, so you have to get the right kind of print head. You might also want to know that the plastics we're using are biocompatible and are used in the medical business as well for making little parts and stitches and things like that. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to being able to make this available to that kind of community. You need a new liver. Yeah. The last one was bad and had to be punished, no doubt. Yeah. All right, looking for more hands now. And we've got one up front, sir.
For the big speed, this might and will not soon be able to replicate. Do you have a list, or can you roughly say what it can't do itself?
Right.
And second thing for the exactly what's the raw material cost.
Okay. Okay, the two-part question, one is, do we have a parts list that it can't make? And second is, what's the basic raw material cost of the plastic? Okay, if you go to this website, there is a bill of materials, and it's a Google spreadsheet, and it lists RP parts, which is rapid prototype parts, and everything else, and you can sort it, and you can print it. That we've got, we've gone really serious on making sure you can get bills of materials and where you can get parts from and stuff. It's all on that site, and there's links to the blogs, and we don't mind receiving emails, and it's all cool. But if you don't count nuts, bolts, and washers, I think we've got about somewhere around 70% of the parts. I mean, not the electronics, obviously, but the mechanical parts, about 70% that we're making, if you don't count nuts, bolts, and washers. Nuts, bolts, and washers are really easy to get hold of, but we're still trying to phase them out with things like plugs and wood screws, because if you use a wood screw instead of a nut and bolt, you've actually got to have washers on either side as well, because it's soft plastic and the bolts will disappear in it. So you've just sort of reduced your parts count by a quarter, to a quarter or something like that. Cost of the plastic. The PLA plastic I'm using cost me about $60 for a 10 kilo bag, something like that. It's about three times the cost of polythene. Okay, but it's starting to come down as it's getting more popular because of its eco-friendly nature. Alright. Yes, madam. All right, so the question is, how do you go from object through a program to the object? We tend to design objects from scratch using software that is open source, although some student who won't be mentioned uses SolidWorks. Art of Illusion's good, Blender's good, artofillusion.org. It's written in Java. Please don't let that put you off. It's actually a ray tracer as well, and it's phenomenally fast, and it does huge renders and things. And I got into it because I'm a bit of a graphics guy as well. It's got a more intuitive user interface than Blender. If you're a hotkeys guy, you'll love Blender, and Blender will output STL files. Nice thing about Art of Illusion, though, is that it's got a EULA solid verifier. So it will verify that what you have created is a real 3D shape and doesn't have a Klein bottle in the middle of it. So we're not very good at printing Klein bottles. Okay. So you can also, and I saw this on Slashdot a little while ago, send some photos off to some site, and they'll produce a 3D model of it. And there are various projects for scanning things using LEDs, immersing them in milk layer by layer and all sorts of things, and then reconstructing a 3D object from it. There are lots of people who will no doubt subvert this hardware into turning it into a 3D solid scanner as well. And good luck to them, and I really want to see what they come up with. But basically, we tend to design objects, use Art of Illusion or Blender. Then you just import them into a nice GUI builder and it prints. All right? Back there, sir. Okay, for someone who's a software guy, not a hardware guy, how easy is it to put one of these things together? If you can handle a hacksaw and sort of chop the rods up to size, you okay with that part? Yeah, okay. Once you've got all the rods cut to size, and you've sort of reamed all the little bits of crap that hang around inside the parts after you've fabricated them, because, you know, they're not perfectly clean, right? Putting together the mechanics of it, it takes Adrian about 4 hours when he's being constantly interrupted by students. So, you know, you could probably put it together in a day, mechanically. The electronics, I don't know. How good are you at soldering? That's the hard part, isn't it? The Arduino stuff is going to be easier because you get the Arduino boards. And, you know, we're trying to get it to the point where you can use other people's ready-made hardware as well. But, you know, trying to find that and keep it open is a bit hard. So it's kind of hard to say how long it's going to take the electronics. Hopefully, of course, one day we'll be able to produce the electronics as well once we get the metal head embedding stuff in plastic. We'll do one from this side, NASA. Can I print something small? Do we have time? Well, no, you're not going to kick us out, are they? Mm-hmm. At 6 o'clock. Oh, right, okay. I'm going to have to rescale my screen, and this is going to go away, but you don't care, do you? No. All right, okay. Sorry? Half an hour. Oh, yeah. We'll do some. One of the rings. All right. Oh, you've seen the rings. Okay. Now I need this. Yeah, where are we? X screen. I'll show you how it works then, display. Please give me decent resolution again. Ah. Oh, I can see this better. Okay, we'll keep that resolution. Right. So I can't be bothered to close all those windows. We'll move over here. Right. We've got all the files are on SourceForge in Subversion, by the way, so you can download it and go and do and load it to your favorite IDE or command line. I happen to like Eclipse, you know. I'm touched like that. We do have installables for Linux and one of those other operating systems. I might want what, sweetie? My thermometer thing. Ah, yes, my thermometer. The thermometer is not actually an essential part of the RepRap from a purely operating perspective. However, from a paranoia perspective, knowing that you are not about to vaporize a whole load of Teflon, which is nasty, is a good thing. So, sorry? Oh well, it does in theory know the temperature of the nozzle. In theory, it's temperature controlled. All right, but I helped write the code, and so I'll stick a thermocouple on it. All right, now I'll pass some of these bits around. I'll pass the whole lot around. You know, but please put them back because like this takes 7 hours to print. Okay. So having them back again is cool. If people want things, come see me. I'll print rings or something. All right. So could somebody divvy that out while we get on with the setup? All right. Okay. Right. First thing you got to do. You can actually see something up there. That's cool. Is you've got to warm it up. So. We turn on the heater, and it thinks it's at 20 Celsius. That's fine. And then we enter, about 130 Celsius there. Now you've got to remember there's a zero in that box, because if you forget, you set the temperature to 1,300 Celsius, and it will try really hard. Okay. How far does it get? Well, it gets up to about 600 before the barbecue paint disintegrates and fails. But before then, your Teflon sort of reaches breakdown point and starts producing PFIBs, which are really nasty war gases that go through respirators. So when that happened, ages ago now, we had to clear out the workshop and everybody was unhappy with me for a day. Yeah. So 43. It's creeping up. Yeah, I had to make lots of tea that day. Yeah. Once we could get back in again. Okay. Well, while that's warming up, I'll show you how we load in an object. Go away. I don't want to see that. I want to see that. Okay. Let's have a look in Vic's playground. Come on, open up. So we've got lots of interesting things in here. Somewhere in there is, Holy Ring, 18 millimeter. That'll do. All right. When we've got the multiple material stuff around, you'll be able to select the material. And I'll be with you in a minute, mate. So I can rotate that on the x-axis, and I can move it to somewhere on the build. Oh, you can't see it. Okay. Do I have an Alt key handy? All right. Can I move this? Yes. All right. So I can move that around and position it somewhere on the board. So we'll stick it about there, because I happen to know that's sort of in range and everything. Excuse me, I'm going to have to scroll this down again to get to everything. What's my temperature at? Well, it's at 98. When it gets to about 120, we can print. All right. We could try and make it ramp up really fast, but then you end up with the bits that are near the coil being really, really hot. And the nozzle being, well, not quite as hot. And what happens is, before your plastic flows out the nozzle, it sort of carbonizes slightly. And then it starts coming out brown, and it's not good. Yeah. The other thing I can do on this interface is... God, I wish I'd plugged the mouse in now. You got yours. Okay. I think I'm coping. We can like zoom in as well, and we can tilt it. That's what I'm going to print. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so let's drag that out the way. Whoop. You're supposed to drag now. Not move, drag. There we go. Am I sure I don't want the mouse? No, I'm not sure I don't want the mouse. And we had... Oh, look, we're at 112 now. We can start firing up. If you want to see it operating on Saturday, I'll be at the open day with this. So, yeah. We'll extrude this. So, yeah, it's close enough. And... You can't see any blinking lights or anything, but hopefully this plastic will start to go through. If you haven't got the head at the right temperature, there's enough sort of mechanical advantage in there for it to actually push the extruder out of the end of the holder. That is bad. Yes, the clip on there is actually broken from where this happened previously, and actually I just sort of drilled a hole through everything and stuck a screw through it. So
now seems to be about the time for all the quitters to leave, but if you want to actually see this make something, just hang around for 5 or 10.
All right, okay, we're actually extruding a little bit of plastic, so I'm going to give it a go, and if it doesn't work, we'll just restart the batter. All right. Pull that off. A little bit of plastic there. This is where you hope that the X sensor works properly and doesn't sort of compact everything. Also, you know, in my workshop, you find cats under here. If you see one of those photos, I'm not replicating cats. No.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, no. Wait till we got the inkjet head, then we'll have a go. It's saying, yeah, it's okay. It'll get the general idea. Unfortunately, the software turns the heater off before it moves the axes. And we'll fix that. Prestige. Right. Yeah, was it this CC copycat? Yeah. Yeah. Come on, warm up, you beggar. It's saying, it's cold. Sulking in the corner. Anybody got a light? Yeah, no. Yeah.
Is there anything to assist you with more complicated stuff? Because there are limits as to what you can do just because of the way you're extruding it.
Yeah, we need multiple material printouts so we can do overhangs and things like that. And we'll have automated software for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's just in your head, and you design an object, and it tries to print that. And if you tell it to print a bridge with no visible means of support in the middle, it will try. And it looks like, it looks really interesting and spiderwebby sometimes. It's, yeah. So how are we doing down here? Oh, yeah, we're actually doing something. This is okay. At least I hope we're doing something and not just making a groove in the wooden platform at the bottom. Yeah, the LEDs flash when the motor is sort of ticking over. You can't see it, but there's a little red LED buzzing away like crazy on here, which is saying, I'm heating things up. Yeah, question there. Do we scale objects? We have a scaling up and down by 2.54 built in, right? Guess why? But generally, no. You do the scaling in one of the GUI design programs. You can import an STL file into Art of Illusion, grow it, and check it away again. Yeah. So let's have a look. Yeah, the first layer is very thin. It's sort of pushed into the wood, so you get a good bonding, so the part doesn't go drifting off across the work surface. A new friend.
Camera, think projector.
Ooh.
Who would that
be? Oh yeah. Yes, yes, you can steal the video. We can probably. No, that didn't work. Just trying to figure out how to turn the front lights on. Anybody know?
While we're busy organising the amazing technological feat of adding a camera, while we're busy organising the amazing technical feat of applying a camera to this device, we'll give Vic something soft to copy.
Oh.
And something a bit more technical to copy.
Ah, a mouse.
It's made out of plastic, mostly.
Yes, I need a mouse. Thank you very much. Okay.
A leading point for the Google student party? Not as far as I know, but if you were to wander up to Reggio now and ask, that would probably be good.
Okay. I think we have a question down the front here, yeah.
Practical question. How good is the connection between the extruded layers? Have you done destructive testing to see what kind of strength you can get out of it already?
Okay, well, question is how good's the adhesion between the layers? They're fused.
Okay.
You're not going to prime the part with your finger.
Okay.
They don't tend to break. Bad penguin. Yeah, they don't tend to split. They don't tend to split down the layers, as it were. It tends to break somewhere else. So yeah.
Okay.